Miss Speakers, good morning.
Good morning, Chair. How are you?
I'm good this morning. And yourself?
No, I'm fine, Chair.
So thank you so much, and welcome.
Thank you, Chair. Okay.
Mr. Mali Akesha Zembe, good morning.
Sobo on a star.
No, Mr. Mara, it's standing in for all of us up there in Cape Town. So we're fine there. So we're adequately represented by him. Colleagues, I request we delay starting the meeting by 5 minutes or so. It's already 4 minutes past. We are missing a few members to make a quorum. And Brian is attending to that situation.
We have attended but
okay, sure. thank you very much. Thank you very much, colleagues. Let me apologize for starting the meeting 6 minutes late. We couldn't start until I was sure that we do have a quorum. Brian has confirmed that we are now correct. With that, let me welcome everyone present. Welcome all the members of the committee. In fact, it's their meeting. I welcome the Department of Defense, and I'm not too sure if the minister is in the meeting, but I see that her system is locked in.
I am here, Chair.
Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, honorable members. I am here. Thank you
so much. And welcome, Minister. Thank you so
much.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks. And I know the Office of the Auditor General is represented in the meeting. Can I get a confirmation of that statement?
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. It's Lawrence here. We are represented. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lawrence and the AG team. You are welcome to the meeting. And SAPRA, South African Health Products Regulatory Authority. I see Ms. Helen Rees, Dr. Helen Rees, I hope but she will correct me, is in the meeting, and I don't know who else from the side of SAPRA. Can I get confirmation that they are in the meeting?
Yes, this is Professor Rees here. I'm the chair of the board. But Ms. Heller, who's the deputy chair, is on. I also haven't scanned all the names. And Dr. Tumi Simeti, who's the CEO, is on, and she'll be presenting. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor, and welcome. And I also welcome all the members that are forming part of your delegation. And from the department, we've invited the Surgeon General, Lieutenant Dr. Zola Dabula, as the head of the of service, and we've also made this specific invitation to the Chief of Logistics, Lieutenant General Jablani Mboli, and we've also invited again specifically the CFO, the Chief Financial Officer, to the meeting. And because this is an urgent meeting, it follows the presentation that the Auditor General made to the committee. It was a briefing on COVID-19 expenditure as at 30th September 2020. It's not a reactive, it's not about a reactive audit report, but it's an audit investigation that the President requested the AG to conduct into COVID-19 expenditure. So they call it a real time. I don't know why it's called a real time. conference at the end of July, from the 1st of April to 31st July 2020. And the second report, we promised that it will be a second report, and that second report was released in November. It covers the period 1st of August to 30th September 2020. The report mentioned a few areas, talking about the chapter that deals with the Department of Defense. It refers, talks about the Wuhan repatriation mission, which was a job well done. We really commend the Department of Defense for executing that, special mandate with precision. It also refers to medicine and equipment, some issues that the department flags are matters that we will look at as we deal with all the matters raised in the report of the Auditor General, this one, and the report that will be the regular report, the annual report that they present to Parliament. But from this medicine and equipment, we flagged the procurement of interferon, heparin, for a further discussion. The reason why we flagged this one was because whilst the other matters are now water under the bridge, but this one, it's still ongoing. We procured medicine, and there are issues with procurement. There have been issues with, the issues with the storage, and there have been issues with the recording of medicine, and as it were, only about 10 vials, 10 out of 970,895 vials have so far been used or administered, representing 0.001%. But it's medicine that was procured, as we were told, because they were responding to an emergency. So we flagged that for discussion. The department in the last meeting was on the 3rd of February, was ready to respond to some of the issues that the AG raised, but because time would not have permitted fuller discussion on the matter, realizing that we'll not do justice to it, we then deferred the matter to this day. And we requested that in the meantime, between the 3rd and the 17th today, the department must furnish the AG with all outstanding information that the AG is required in order to do justice to the audit. Then we were told that the outstanding information limited the scope, and we impress upon the department to ensure that that information is submitted to the AG and so that you know, we get to the ages able to you know, perform its mandate without any hindrance. And the law is very clear that when the AG calls for information, that the auditee must furnish the auditor general with such. So we were not asking for anything out of the ordinary, but we were saying this is the law and the law must be complied with. And so we'll get a report on that as well. So the AG report also looked at other matters which are not for a discussion today. What is for discussion is the procurement or the importation of the interferon drug, stroke medicine. We were told that it's not registered, and that it's a matter we are here to discuss today. We then, because the report was implicating, was very clear on the functional areas that were implicated, that it was implicating, we then requested that we you know, call the heads of those divisions just to share with us, give light on the matters that the AG raised. Only them can assist us, can actually enlighten us as to what exactly happened. In addition, we invited SAHPRA, the South African Health Products Authority, because they are the regulatory authority created in terms of the law, and they have a mandate to perform. And they want to discuss with them their concerns. We know they have concerns about this. And I'm sure in their presentation will tell us the specific provisions that the procurement breached. And the remedies that they have in law to deal with the situation. So that is reserved for SAHPRA and today. And so, colleagues, let's start. Brian, can you then you know, flight the agenda so that we all know where we are with the agenda or what to expect today. This is the agenda for today. I've introduced the issues in welcoming everyone else. Can you note apologies, Brian?
Chair, we have an apology from Deputy Minister Magwepa, who is unable to attend owing to medical reasons. We have a second apology from Nkosi Qebekhulu, who is also attending a portfolio committee on public service and administration, which sits also at the same time. Those are all the apologies that we have, sir.
Thank you very much. Right. I will take the comments of the minister at the end, that is after all the presentations, before we launch into the discussion and then deal with remainder of the items. With that, colleagues, I now invite yes, sir, Mr. Marin.
Sorry, my hand is just up. Just for a request, can we have a question and response session after each presentation? Because if we wait for until the right to the end, some of the information might be lost in translation as the word go proverbial. So my request is if we can, after each presentation, that we can ask specific questions and get responses for that. It'll be much appreciated. Thank you very much.
I'm tempted, Mare, to accommodate that, but please note that we have to leave this meeting at 1 because there's a sitting at 2, so we don't have much time today. And so if I look at the items on the agenda, they may take us right up to you know, the last minute allocated to us. Now, but with questions in between, I wonder if we get to the end of the agenda. I thought what we'll do, colleagues will note the questions. We'll take the presentation, the first one, move to the second one, and to the third one. Perhaps I'll stop there, and then allow you to raise questions, so that when the minister comes back, at least you have a fuller picture. I'm worried about time, Mr. Mara. I know if I let two colleagues ask questions, you go to town. I'm in Westville, and it's just that the town is not very far here. But I know you go far.
Listen, but I mean, this is so important, and it has been such a huge issue that if we don't go into this really in depth, then you know, when will we have an opportunity?
No, I'm trying to manage time, Mr. Mare. I sympathize with you. Sorry, I sympathize with the position. I'm trying to manage time. Unless if you all agree that I've given me two questions.
But Jay,
the question is not
adequate at all. Is it not interlinked? It's the same thing.
It's, we're dealing with the same thing. We're dealing with the same thing. I mean, you look, item number one has Heperon, item number two has Heperon, item number three has Heperon. The issues are intertwined.
Yeah, and so maybe what we want to know then, the if item number four will rectify their thing. So I think we can have all the briefings and then we can ask questions.
Yes, colleagues, I'm not trying to stop you, Mr. Mare. Please note your questions. You actually raise them at the right time. With that, can I then call upon Professor Rhys to give us her opening address and then invite the COO to take us through their presentation.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for this opportunity. It's also, I think, an opportunity for us to explain it. It's not something like a drug regulatory authority isn't at the forefront of everyone's thinking when you think about the health sector. It's not at the forefront of everyone's thinking, but it's an absolutely essential part of a health system, because it's the part of the system that ensures that drugs that are available, and that's all health products, are safe and of quality and effective in the way that they came to be. So it works pretty much behind the scenes, but I think in this current pandemic, I think people are learning more about the role of the regulator. One of the things that the regulator is responsible for is to ensure that drugs that come into the country are licensed or have a permission from the regulator, and there are different ways in which that permission can be given. And that would include taking drugs in that are, for example, to be tested in a clinical trial. So these would not be licensed drugs. The licensed drugs are the ones that you'll, you know, get from the pharmacy, from a clinic, and in a hospital. And there are different ways in which approvals can be given, but what is essential is that the drugs that are imported into a country are one way or another, have an approval so that their purpose and intent is known. If that doesn't happen, that the threat is really quite profound, and I'll just give you some current examples. We read, for example, yesterday that in China people have been arrested now for creating counterfeit vaccines, COVID vaccines. We should anticipate that with COVID, the issue of counterfeit drugs is going to be significant. We've also recently this week had reports that illegally imported ivermectin is from 8 different sources, mostly from India, are contaminated with other products, which really makes them potentially quite unsafe. So the issue of actually making sure that all the drugs that come in, one way or another, have been approved by the regulator is critical to the safety of the drugs in the country. And to date, I think South Africa has done really, really well. I think all of us feel confident when we go, you know, to the pharmacy, that what we're getting is what it says it is, and it's going to treat us for what we want it to treat us for, and that we know the safety parameters and they're clearly spelled out on the product. So against that background, this is really the context in which we're going to have this discussion. And Dr. Tumi Smati, the CEO of SAHPRA, is going to make a brief presentation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Prof. And the Chair. And may I know the CEO to take us through the presentation.
Good morning, colleagues, and thank you for having us in this meeting this morning. And in the meeting, we've got, as the chair of the board indicated, we've got the chair, we've got the deputy chair. We also have Prof. Shabir Banu, who chairs our technical committee of the board and a board member. We also have some of our executive members of SAHPRA in the form of a board secretary, as well as our CFO and other colleagues that may have joined later. So this is, I'll take you through very briefly in terms of the update on interferon alpha. Just briefly before I go into detail on this, I just want to also maybe provide some context in terms of our role as a regulator. So as a regulator, our role is to ensure that we register or we authorize all health products in the country. So that is medicines, medical devices, as well as IVDs, as well as areas in radiation, products in radiation. And in us registering that, it doesn't only end with the registration, we also do the monitoring while those products are then available in the country. We do the monitoring, we do the investigation. We also license facilities that either are manufacturers of these products, they are wholesalers or distributors. So basically anyone who imports or manufactures a health product in the country needs to be authorized by SAHPRA. For those who then also import or export products, they also need to be authorized by SAHPRA. In addition, what we do is we also authorize clinical trials. So these are then the studies that will take place in the country prior to any drug receiving authorization. And you may have seen a number that we've authorized as a regulator around the COVID-19 vaccine. Now, with that process, there are instances wherein there's a need to access a drug that is not necessarily registered in the country, or if it's registered, it's unavailable. So within the Medicines Act, which is the act that governs how we operate as a regulator, there is an allowance under what we call Section 21, wherein we can use that mechanism to authorize the sale of any unregistered medicine for purposes as we will determine, you know, based on the application for certain quantities that would be required and for a specific purpose. So this is a very narrow mechanism that is particularly structured to enable access to unregistered medicines in those cases where there's a very strong rationale that's been provided to us as a regulator. And this part of the Act is enabled by regulations, Regulation 29 of the General Medicine Regulation. So we do have regulations that then give effect to this part of the Act in Section 21. So under the Section 21, you know, authorization would be to provide access to an unregistered medicine on a very exceptional basis where conventional therapies have been ruled out or have failed or are unavailable. Also, we provide Section 21 where a clinical trial is being conducted, the product is not available in the country and it then needs to be brought in specifically for then that clinical trial study. And in a decision, a Section 21 decision, we always make consideration for the safety of the product, the efficacy of the product, as well as the quality of the product. And these are three key aspects to the FAPRA mandate. Just some background on Interferon Alpha. So I've shared with you what it is that we do as a regulator, and I've shared with you this mechanism of Section 21. Now, when we come to the specific product, being Interferon Alpha 2B, this is an antiviral drug, antineoplastic drug, that is generally used for the treatment of hairy cell leukemia, malignant melanoma, Kaposi sarcoma that is caused by AIDS, etc. We do have this product registered in South Africa for these indications, that is Interferon Alpha 2B. Now, this is a product that indeed has been under consideration for as a repurposed drug for COVID-19. So in any, you know, with all of these drugs that are being repurposed, we undergo quite a thorough literature review analysis as a regulator so that we keep abreast of what are the scientific developments around that specific drug. And we always consider, you know, any peer-reviewed data that emerges from any studies around these drugs. But also we consult quite a lot with the WHO and other regulators, but also nationally we consider the advisories from the National Essential Medicines List Committee within the Department of Health. So this is a drug that we've all been keeping an eye on as it was being evaluated for COVID. And so on the 24th of November, you know, there was a published review by the National Essential Medicines List Committee that at a high level, basically what was said is that it doesn't recommend the use of interferon alpha for the treatment of COVID-19, particularly for hospitalized patients, and that it could be considered under a clinical trial. And this is on the basis of the information that at the time was limited. And also even until today, there's very limited data on this product. This is a product that was also included in the Solidarity trial, and there's many other interferons. I think there's two others, if not one other, that was included in the Solidarity trial. And also we consulted with WHO, and they also indicated that they do not recommend the use of this product outside of a clinical trial. And what they indicated was that this product had little or no effect on hospitalized COVID-19 patients in terms of overall mortality, initiation of ventilation, and duration of hospital stay. So these are just two examples that I provide in terms of some of the considerations, reviews, and opinions from experts in the area that we consider, but we also look at peer review data. So just to then go into the context around the matter that we're discussing today. So in August, so around the 27th of August, we received an application for bulk stock of heparin. So this is the same drug, so the human interferon alpha 2B from the SANDF. In that application, there were no quantities that were mentioned. And there was quite a bit of information that we required that was not provided in terms of the clinical benefit of this product. So once, after looking at the application, we then rejected this application. So this is on August. On the 5th of October, we received a named patient authorization request. And the clinical requirement around this was to boost defense against COVID-19 complications for the single named patient that was indicated in this application. And this is for the use, was for the use of 10 vials of the interferon alpha-2b. And the application was approved, and I'll share some detail on that. On the 21st of October, we received bulk stock authorization request again, and there were still no quantities that were mentioned, still no further information supplied, and the application was then again rejected, but with the recommendation that all relevant details about the application be submitted to SAHPRA. And until, you know, to date, we hadn't received any further information on that. So according to us, the bulk stock request remained rejected by the authority on the basis of insufficient information being provided, but also the basis that this is a drug that is not authorized for use for the management of COVID. It is, we would only consider it for use in a clinical trial study. So what then became aware, so if you take note, so we had these engagements in August, October, and with the latest being around the 21st of October. It then came to our attention around November that the product was imported into South Africa. We understood that the product was imported around April, and our initial engagements, as you note, with the SANDF was from August. So we became aware of this only in November, and so our inspectors then went to the facility, which is what we typically do, right? So if we become aware that there's a product that has not been authorized, brought in by someone who is not licensed, we have our inspectors that then go and inspect the facility and inspect the consignment. So in this case, the team then on the 11th of February, they went to the SNDF facilities here in Pretoria, and they met with the responsible pharmacist, being Colonel Omar Mohammed. So at the meeting, they engaged with the responsible pharmacist, who then indicated that this matter needs to be escalated to one of the colonels at the facility. So the team reached out then to Colonel May after that for numerous occasions. Many emails were being shared just so we can meet and agree on a way forward around this and ensure that we can inspect the facility and understand context around this product that was brought in, because what we had was primarily in the media. And as I indicated, from our perspective, we had the last engagement was around a rejection of that bulk request. So a lot of, we tried to engage, and we were not able, we were not successful. And so in January, the team went to the site again, the Military Health Base Depot in Pretoria. And because what we typically do, when there's a product being brought in by an entity that is not authorized, our team always goes, with the South African Police Services, etc. So in this case, the same was done. So it wasn't really targeted at all. It was, what is our common practice, that we always go out with the police services. And the reason why we went is, again, because the SNDF is not authorized to import the product. So they were then accompanied by the Hawks. When they arrived at the facility, and I must say it was a very cordial engagement according to my team, nothing like what the media reported on this. They met with Colonel May, who then made herself available for that discussion. And what she then requested that, you know, the meeting that the team wanted to have with her to make a resolution on this be postponed because she wanted to engage with her principals on this matter. We went on the 29th of January and she indicated that she would have a meeting with the principals on the 1st of February and we would then have a follow-up meeting on the 3rd of February. However, that meeting of the 3rd of February was subsequently cancelled. But on that same date, on the 29th, the team requested that they inspect the product, which they were, again, as I said, the meeting was very cordial. So they went and they viewed the facility and they confirmed with me that the product was stored adequately in a cold room at a warehouse. The one thing we would need to check was the expiry date. I don't have any details on that, but we know that the product is stored adequately. So this is then, so we then met with the FNDF on the 9th of February to align, and this is after, you know, really battling, and I'm glad that we had this meeting of the 9th of February, because I think we then aligned in terms of where we may have missed each other throughout all of this. From our perspective, I think we may not have been engaging with the correct people, and I think we've made significant progress since the 9th of February. So we met on the 9th of February where we were, we got context from the Military Health Services in terms of why they brought the product in, and also the team from procurement shared their presentation with us. We had then after that, we agreed that we'll have a follow-up meeting where we will then discuss a way forward, where the head surgeon, Dr. Davula, was also there, as well as Dr. Mbidi, and I think we had very good discussion. So we had this meeting on the 12th of February, and we agreed on the following, that indeed this product is not authorized, and the proposal we put on the table, which was accepted, was that there will be a clinical trial application that is submitted, because there's still a lot of information that's still, you know, scientific data that's required for this product. The FNDF will put together a clinical trial application. We will assist them with that. They've already met with our technical team, who took them through the details of the requirements around the clinical trial. And as soon as we receive, this application, we will expedite the review thereof. We also agreed that we will issue a joint press statement, which was actually drafted, and yesterday we got feedback from the FNDF that they were happy with that joint press statement. So Chair, I think as we said, we've managed to find each other in this process, and we've really had some very fruitful discussions on the 12th of February, which will also ensure that going forward, there is then a collaboration between SAFRA and the NCNDF, particularly when it comes to matters of just providing clarity and guidance on matters related to health products. I will pause here, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ultimelo. The CEO of the entity, SAPRA, for enlightening us. Without much ado, let me now invite the Surgeon General to give us the SAMS or stroke defense side of the story. Once we are done, we'll then look at issues of procurement. In that, we'll also look at financial delegations and all that. I now invite Dr. Zola Davula. This is our Surgeon General. Over to you, sir. Thank you so much.
Good morning, Chair, and members of the committee. I think I also need to say thank you very much for the committee to give the National Defence Force this opportunity to explain some of the things which have been flighted in the media and regrettably not being a reflection of exactly what is happening and what has happened.
Professor Tabula, would very much try to stay away from what was in the media, if you can. Otherwise, the meeting would be short-tracked. And anyone who wants to make reference to matters that were in the media, as his or her substance for presentation today, I'll try to ask him or her nicely to stay away from those. We are dealing with the report of the Auditor General. I've not read the media, even if I did, but I knew I would get the information, the right information from the right sources. Can we just keep to that, and so that our meeting don't get dragged too much to matters that this meeting is not about. Well, as we said, we are not inquiring about the therapeutic efficacy and effect of the medicine or drug and the country of origin. And the debate is for another day and for other people. We are just inquiring about the procedure followed to bring the unregistered medicine drug on our shores when the prescribed requirements were met. Okay? And if there was any departure from the established parties, whether there is authority that justifies such departure, and whether SAMS would have not have achieved better results had it acted within the parameters of the law in their rush to get the drug. Those are matters that we are looking at. And I hope you would agree with me that once we get to what is being said by whom and all that, we'll get sidetracked. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I thought I was just trying to sort of clear the air, so to speak, before one gets to, we've got our presentation that has been set up and which is going to address most of the issues which are being spoken. But I think I really need to allow me to say that our engagement with SAHPRA and the latest, as has been said by the CEO now, is a very good reflection of the fact that we really found each other while there had been a problem before. So I need to say that before I allow the team that is in Pretoria to flight the presentation for the committee. But I just wanted to say that we've really found each other with SAHPRA in respect of everything else that relates to the clinical trials that we've agreed upon and all that sort of scenario. I will then request the team that is in Pretoria to put the presentation on the slide, and then thereafter request Dr. Mnisi to take us through it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. The team is called by the SG, the Surgeon General.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and it's a privilege for the Surgeon General to allow me to make this presentation. I am Lieutenant Colonel J.T. Nisi. I'm a principal specialist in family medicine, registered with the Professional Council of South Africa as a specialist of family medicine and primary health care, which amongst others also has to deal with preventative medicine other than curative medicine. Hence my involvement and my employment at SADF in this aspect of combating COVID-19. I am also leading a department of family medicine at One Military Hospital, which also has the entire family medicine within the defense in area medicine, as well as in the two military hospitals, two military and three military hospitals. Without much ado, I'll go on the presentation as prepared. The aim of this presentation is to brief members of the PCD regarding the findings of the Auditor General of South Africa, including the strategic seeking questions which has been forwarded to us. I will give the menu on the items to be covered in the interest of time and go straight to the introduction. The Auditor General made findings based on four focus areas, which include 1. Deployment of soldiers to various provinces to assist with enforcing law and order. The implementation of additional health measures, including the establishing quarantine sites, laboratory and field hospitals with necessary equipment, procurement of personal protective equipment, and the repatriation of South African citizens from one province, China. I won't waste much time on issues that are not central to the agenda, as it has been put that our focus is on the procurement of heparin. I will keep this slide, which the chairperson has introduced, that there was no fighting, and congratulated on Umbana. And then I will, the issue of the misallocation of funds, which the relevant people have already alluded to, that the oversight has been since corrected, and as far as they are concerned, the papers are in order and such declaration will be made by a relevant accounting officers in the field of finance. I will see this one. Now, when it comes to the productive questions, specific questions will form the headings of the slide, starting from this slide number 8 going forward. There was a question on the issue of assessment which was done before the drug was acquired. At the beginning of COVID-19 pandemic, there was no single drug that could cure COVID. Those who were there will remember that drugs like chloroquine were suggested, as well as some ARVs, as part of the drugs that could cure COVID. If you look into the protocol that was released then, some of the drugs, if not all of the drugs that were in that protocol, were found to not be useful. Now, all the drugs were experimental, and force protection became the best option against a pandemic that had no cure. By admission of expert and available evidence, then this available evidence is what the CEO of SAHPRA had already spoken about, alluding to clinical trials and alluding to the importance of drugs as far as treatment in hospitalized patients is concerned. We agree with them because we are part of the same clinical interaction. There, the interferon alpha 2b, which heparin refers belongs to, is the same family as the intron, which is also registered by SAHPRA. As the CEO has mentioned about the alpha 2b interferon in general. And the heparin is actually an example of an alpha 2b interferon with molecular structure similar, everything classification similar. The difference is the heparin that we have, and hence this is where the need also comes. We look at the intron that already is registered within SAHPRA, which is an interferon, and we saw that each human serum antigen seems to be high. And since we're going to use it on a number of people, we may not even have time to see the compatibility and minimize side effect. So the same concern that SAPRA had in terms of safety, we were worried about the safety, and we felt we can't use Intron on a large scale. We need a more purified interferon, which belongs to the same class of registered drugs within SAPRA. And we satisfied ourselves that the drug we need would be one with lesser HSA capability, and that was found to be Heveron, which has 1.5 capability, less than 5 times what Intron and other drugs have. And because it was the safest drug, we said that it was necessary and it was a need drug to import. Why? Because our need assessment was there is no cure. So since there is no cure and it will take a while to find cure to combat, we need at least an immunomodulator, a drug that will offer interferon for combating the virus so that it can undermine the severity of the disease should people get infected with it. Why we needed to undermine the severity of the disease and it was a need? We advise as the Department of Primary Health and Family Medicine there, if you need to have soldiers having their boots on the ground and working in different deployments, you do not have time to have them in ICU sending hospitals when the country's security is at stake. And the CIC has already, as many people have seen, the CIC was clad in military uniform for the first time since the president was, to show that he was now putting us all in a combat mode. Not only did we have few people, as many people were now immobilized by the COVID, we also had exhausted the color of our reserve forces in needed areas. And we felt that if we just go the curative route, which the Department of Health had, was in the process of going at the time, looking at the registering drugs for hospitalized patients, we would end up not being able to secure our mandate or secure the country. So we needed prevention. That assessment was done there. An additional biological measure to supplement known etiquette, because already the Department of Health had already said the preventive measures which they had at their disposal at the time, that is in March, during the stage 5 lockdown, when the whole country was to an absolute standstill, if not the whole of the world. There was sanitation, social distancing, cough etiquette, and others. So we needed something in addition to this. And why we needed this? We understood that our soldiers are going to be involved in scuffles with people. Our soldiers are going to be in concentration areas during deployment. And therefore, the context meant that you cannot deploy people and help them carry their duties where all this will be 100% secure. So SAMS has put the task of force protection within the South African military, South African National Defense Force, took it upon himself to interact with people who had experts who had experience of handling this drug. We look into what countries that seem to have lower mortality per rate of 1,000 were doing. This information is available on the wellness odometer of COVID-19. Then the current interferon was found to be potentially useful, and we are using potentially useful because we were very actively aware that there was no randomized clinical trial that would support that process. But faced with life and death, and you have that as the only measure, you either face death and say there is no RCT, or you either secure the drug and use it and gather evidence on an ongoing basis. By the way, the absence of RCT is not the world or other countries' responsibility. It's also our own responsibility to generate the RCT for other countries that would actually say, yes, there's an RCT, and it was found in the South African National Defense Force. It was in that light that we felt we needed to take the lead of the world, because we see South Africa not only as one of the countries, but as a cutting-edge country, and our defense stands with pride as one of the best defenses in the world, so far as medicine is concerned. I know that because at that clinical level, we do have clinical interactions with the students, with the Chinese, with the Vietnamese, with the Americans. We have done it during the advent of HIV when the cancer project was working. And we were willing to reinvent the wheel. Now, that we have. Our motto is we are saving the brain. The protection of the human medical personnel in different hospitals globally gave us some anecdotal evidence because we looked into their deployment in Italy, which had already happened by the time the decision was taken, and realized as our interaction was with them, while Italian health workers were affected, the students were not affected, working in the same environment. And that's when they revealed to us that they are using interferon every 6 months for their own cost protection. We felt that since we were going to be deployed in hotspots, we needed interferon boost as the virus is known to target the natural interferon. And we know with South Africa's state of immunity, state of HIV, where we know very well that though South Africa contributes 0.8% of the world population, we contribute 12% of the world HIV. And we know the virus fights the interferon. And we felt that we were going to get the virus attack the interferon. People are going to be hospitalized in large numbers, and which actually happened this time. Unless we give people more interferon to keep the virus busy, while the standard of care and other registered medicines by the National Department of Health, which are indeed good to medicine, are busy helping people to recover within the 14 days. The interferon and other COVID-19-related drugs were sought after by many countries. Now, this is to respond to your question. What was the agency of procuring such a huge consignment at once? Now, at the time, remember, the companies had procured drugs like chloroquine beyond even what they needed. Some of the drugs were even using it as an economic terrorism to other people who used it, who needed it, because they take it, cover it beyond what they need, and then sell it to other drugs. So we observed that phenomenon, and we could not ignore that phenomenon. Therefore, so creatures like this are still there. The interferon and other COVID-related drugs were sought after by many countries as the pandemic grew. At that time, now we know the size of the pandemic, but at that time, at the rate it was going, no one and no predictors knew to which extent it was going to go. So decisions were made at that point in time. We can be judged now with the landscape of hindsight. It was during that time that this has been pressured by countries in large quantities that were scared. Continue. It was imperative that in March 2020, with borders closing, another thing was the logistic requirement. And remember, there are few ports of entry, both for South Africa and for other countries, which are held ports of entry. It's one of the requirements which is required by the Director General of Health for legal importation of the drug. The borders were closed at the time, and China was procuring human interferon in large quantities to procure the drug before it is either not available or before it escalates price due to the demand. And may I say at this point, China took all of those drugs to a point that there was not enough demand, there was enough supply from Cuba. And China had to set up its own production in China, which exists now. So we knew with the infrastructure and the financial and the economic situation of South Africa, we were not yet the point of being able to procure our own. So we had to get as much as possible before the Chinese take all of what we needed. The Cuban Medical Brigade, which was called to assist us in rural areas and in areas where most South African doctors were not able to go, and then Cuban doctors were willing and able to go. And I must say at this point, although we have enough number of doctors in South Africa, and some which have been reported unemployed in many areas, many doctors do not want to go to work in certain areas of the country. They want to remain in urban areas. Therefore, the Cuban doctors become important in that regard. They are willing to go to your Lekalale, they are willing to go to your sister case, they are willing to go to the outskirts of KZN without any complaint. They requested to be deployed with medication they best know how to use and have proven efficacy in their environment. I know, Chairperson, you are not debating efficacy, but I want to explain the reason why we have to conjoin together with them. Because they made it very clear to us. If chloroquine has failed and you can deploy as a university, we are coming to administer the same chloroquine, then why have a person on the ground? Would rather come and say, rate in Cuba among the lowest. This is what we're going to do. And may I say at this point, with my department interaction with them, I've been working with them in the house case, and they have partially assisted, even if we didn't administer the whole drug. They put in place some health system measures that we have to incorporate, some of which are non-pharmacological. And that has been very assistive. Number two, the next slide. Over 900,000 was procured. What is the rationale for such quantity? Now, Heveron confers protection for administration of 10 vials per individual over 10 days. That is the approval which I personally applied for with SAHPRA, and I personally administer, and I personally monitor the drug patient, and on the reauthorization says the drug has actually worked well. The information. I read that at this time the bulk of people information she was making, my email interaction with SAHPRA. Either didn't reach because I didn't get any further information, because I did send information to that email provider, not the information required, but asking what is the exhaustive list of the information required for the bulk of people since the website were not assisting at the time. But then it didn't clarify we were talking with the wrong people are not talking on a pointed way, which we have since rectified. This needs to be repeated after 6 months for the duration of the pandemic to maintain optimal interferon levels. This is the information we received from the government to say every 6 months while the pandemic happened, all frontline people continue to get immunomodulation with interferon, and that helps them to be able to cope. If they get positive, they become either asymptomatic or minimum symptoms. And that doesn't really make them to be hospitalized. And that is where they made it very clear that it was never the intention to use interferon for hospitalized people, but was to cut the cost of hospitalization and the need for hospitalization so people can be able to recover in their own home. Actually, at this point, they even told us in one of their AIDS webinars that they don't even isolate people in the home. They've got centers where they isolate people and they control and care the disease. It's something which we have not been able to achieve yet in South Africa. Our 18 force members, both uniform and citizen and reserve members, and our BPA members who are still important, are some beneficiaries who will need interferon boosting and are numerically above what could be procured at the time. For example, this could only cover 23,000 members who are active, caller, reserve for a period of 2 years, repeating 10 vials per member every 6 months with consistent cover. Then the firm has to cover a total of 260,000 of its client base, but we could only calculate 900,000 today. The total number of them beneficiaries stands over 10 times the figure of 260 as said before. This procured figure could prioritize 18 members and call up to 23,000 for the first 2 years of the pandemic. The 10 buyers, okay, how much has been administered today and has it been beneficial? The 10 buyers were administered on a patient and the patient fully recovered without any complications within 7 days of its administration, and in there, he regained energy and the symptoms disappeared. In this regard, it was beneficial. And may I say, this was not a hospitalized patient, and may I say, this was not a COVID pneumonia patient. Lest I be quoted out of context, be making a claim that interferon could treat COVID. What was actually happening? The patient's symptoms were worsening because his own natural interferon was depleted, and now he was going into an autoimmune state, which meant that he was going into a coagulation state where even ventilation was not going to work. So we quickly boosted him in Itaperon and then kept the virus busy, and then he could recover on other medicines which we were using in the country. Did the procured drug serve the need? And what effect did they have on the soldiers? That was the one of the questions forwarded to us. Psychologically, the morale of the soldiers was heightened. And may I say at this stage, in one of the meetings, the member who was cured, because he's a member of the command council staff of them, he stood up in that meeting and said, today I'm willing to go and be deployed in the country to work. Because in this way, I hope you are looking at a dead man walking. He said he had given up hope as he was sleeping down over the stage until it happened. That boosted the psychological morale of everyone who knew that a potentially protective drug would be there. Now, for soldiers and for soldiers' mentality and thinking, which is different from maybe civilian people, if you go into a war zone and you know that you are wearing a potent bulletproof vest, your morale is boosted. That when you go into a war zone and you are just carrying a gun, however effective it is, and you don't have a bulletproof vest, because the bulletproof vest that you use is not approved, it lowers their morale. So the impact could have been more positive with fewer sick days, and had we been able to get a bulk approval, which I now understand why we didn't get, but if we had a bulk approval, we wouldn't have had our wards full to the point where we had to change the seventh floor in one bill to create more level 2 build hospitals, where we had to actually ask Swahili district hospital to admit some of our people. We could not have even gone to those extent, and many other hospitals within County and Western Cape, where we asked Department of Health, please admit some of our soldiers, which is not actually supposed to have happened, and we had that bulk approval and prevented more, because we have lesser admission. It's an admission I made anecdotally, hence we agree with Sabra that going forward would like to use the drug to do the RCT trial so that we can make this claim boldly with scientific method before the third wave, which is more devastating, will come. And therefore, our conscious decision is to save lives and not to stand one day and say, while we had the opportunity to save lives, we were very Kantian in approach and very prosecutorial in approach, and we cut our nose to spite our face. The impact was going to be financially positive, as our soldiers were needed during operations like Nocella and in assistance of national DOE. And then I say, more soldiers were needed in Eastern Cape. We could only, through the Surgeon General, authorize to give a limited brigade, simply because many of our people were in isolation in different areas. I know this because I lead a so-called medical response team whose duty is to treat soldiers in the areas where they find themselves. We actually had to close even military courses because of the same reason. One, okay, how is the drug administered and how is it stored? One vial of 5 million units, everyone are, is diluted in 2 mils of saline and is sprayed in the intranasal, inside the nostrils. Okay, subject, we take syringe daily over 10 days. Students train me how to use this drug. And my suspicion is that I'm the only doctor in South Africa who has administered it with authorization. It is stored and transported at 2 to 8 degrees Celsius. And some vials were taken for something, and it was found that they are all having a good integrity. They are not destroyed. There is no 1% of drug that was destroyed because anything happened. SAPRA approval obtained prior to importation and transportation to the depot. Yes, certain admissions are made because of the situation we find ourselves in. The SNDF understanding at the time what was due to the state, what was due to the state disaster declaration, shared information on intention to use the number of drugs on emergency basis as lockdown was at level 5. We did share the information with the Department of Health, but may I say at this time, It was not in the line with section 22, as I will say. SAPRA would clear emergency procedure draft upon application of section 21 of 1965. And that was our understanding of emergency use of drugs during a disaster act. And may I say, it is probably imperative that some of the benign acts and regulations and procedures needs to be updated to be able to respond to disaster situations and put the legal framework that will be expedited to be used during Department of Defense had put in place a lot of expedited procedures. We had an oversight of not putting them. It refers to SNDF as a normal application process, which included section 22 of the aforementioned act that ought to have been fully explored irrespective of how agencies were. And we found ourselves in this situation where either we have order shards and the medicine not available and us waiting with the telephone staff. Next slide. However, and may I say, on the same as of importation requirements, there are five requirements which I familiarize myself with and have said to SAPRA and have made it clear. One, the issue of safety of the drug. The drug is indeed safe. It is being used in 87 countries over a period of 30 years. It is more safer than the registered intron, for that matter, at a scientific level and also at a usable, at a practical level. And then the other requirement is, for what purpose was the drug to be used? The drug is still to be used as an immunomodulator. And how is the drug stored? They did go there and seize, and then how is the drug going to be administered? That as well was identified. So the five requirements that needed to be cleared for legal importation were found to have been met even during the time, and we made sure that that was the case, because we understood the spirit of the law as it were. SAPRA approval for importation was not secured by DOG at the time due to agency to secure medication within our borders. Further, the cold chain and handling of the drug were fully complied with a joint effort of pharmacies within SEMS. We have a directorate of pharmacy within SEMS, and as well as the medical logistics personnel. We do have the logistics, which is the great law, which is going to present, and we also have specific medic logistics, which also was on board to make sure that the necessary temperatures and monitoring are put. The integrity of the drug was thus protected. The other question raised, it was reported that 40% of the consignment could have been potentially destroyed. SAPRA came to inspect the consignment more than once and even took samples for safety and confirmed that the medicine was not destroyed. None of our drugs were damaged in any manner as we monitor conditions under which they are stored according to manufacturer specifications. And I think with the permission of the defense and the DOD and in local inspection that would be done by anyone authorized would find that it would verify that independently. We are open to better sample testing and to disprove this false and unfortunate assertion. The concern that SAPRA disapproved your application. The CEO has put it very succinctly. I don't want to waste time on what she has gone and said, but there are the dates that buyers approved on the 2020, the bar that was rejected and the reasons why it was rejected at the time. The reason rejected at the time was that we didn't give them good quantities, we didn't give them the motivation for the intended use and so on. And no other untoward reason. Further contacts via email and telephone queries were what we were talking past and we're not finding each other. And it didn't take more than one meeting for us to discuss and at the level understand the authority of SAPRA and declare where we had an omission and actually show what we have placed in, what we have put in place to satisfy what that requirement, legal requirement wanted. And that was satisfactory. SNDF intend to smoothen relationships up, or how does the SNDF intend to use Enron hard, and who will administer it? That is one of the questions. The SNDF intends to smoothen relationships up, as you already have, and Sabra said that the joint statement that is going to be soon released, and that we have gone through, through dialogue and to optimize communication with National Department of Health. Because we realize our communication, in particular with the Director General, who is required in the importation of trucks, was not fully explored. We felt that just the initial information with Department of Health to say we intend to use interferon was enough to clear us. But it was clear that we needed to go to the level of actually writing to the National Department of Health. And then the piece of part that was omitted in the importation, and that made it to be red flag as it is. If you look into the F22 and exhaust it and look into what requirements are needed, which we are aware of, we need to talk with them at all levels. And may I say at this stage, National Department of Health was invited at the Cuban and the Chinese and which was the webinar meeting, which I attended together with specialists from Military Hospital, to be part of that exchange in order for us to compare notes. And for reasons that they were not available or they didn't have necessary aspects to be available, they missed those engagements. Bullet number two, qualified medical doctors within them from the department are tasked with their preventive medicine outside hospital, and may I repeat, outside hospital, which means we are in line with the protocol and the World Health Organization protocol. We'll administer the drug in the same way they did before the, with the approval of 10 vials. And that will answer one of the questions. Why when we have such a big bulk, we only use 10 and we didn't use a huge percentage, we use 0.01%. It is because we are aware as clinicians within them that we are subject to Sabra. Now that we have achieved the agency part of it, which is to secure the medicine before the Chinese take it, that doesn't mean we must now break the law. We must now go to Sabra and say, the agency is satisfied of procuring the drug. That's where the agency comes. Can we now get your permission and your blessing to use the drug? And we are not going to use it without your blessing and your permission. And we have blessing and permission to use for 10, and we use it. We were denied to use for bulk, and we said we will just take the bullet and over-populate the hospital with our people, and in asking a 20 district to admit our people, even if we know we could use the drug, we will just buy the bullet and take the consequences, because we are not authorized to use it. We'll teach the 10. We'll knock on the door until we are allowed. So that shows that we didn't intend and had a premeditated idea to break the law. We have satisfied the one part, get the drug secured to ownership. Now let's go through the registration processes. And that was our thinking, and nothing more. And may I say, Sabra was informed by us about this drug, not that people inspected and found the drug we were in any way trying to hide. It was us who made an interaction with them to about what drugs we had. And may I say, there is also a question to say the drug was imported in March, we had an interaction in August. In that time, we needed a human specialist to also be engaging with doctors who administer the drug within them for training purposes, for preparation purposes. Remember, you can't roll out a drug on ill prepared people. And then if they are not trained and they are not prepared, those people may use it amiss and then we might have a problem. So we needed to actually train and interact with different clinicians within the ground. Now that we have taken the drug and the Chinese are not taking it away. Two webinar clinical meetings are validated, two which have been held with a specialist, which are the consultation we had. And we had one big meeting within one military hospital where all multidisciplinary specialists and head of department were called. And we even brought in to the country the human specialists who come from the production and the pharmaceutical of that drug to actually interrogate the drug to the latest detail. And then national protocol did not have a position on the use of interferon for immunomodulation. Today it still doesn't have. It only has a position on not recommended for hospital use. But we know COVID people are in the majority not in hospitals. They are in the majority outside hospitals. We don't need to wait for them to get in the hospital for us to be at the parents. We can keep them outside hospitals. Therefore, our thinking and our paradigm focus was, we don't need to be hospitalized based in approach. We need to be preventive based in approach. So if a protocol addresses discouragement in hospitalized patients, does it also say discouragement in non-hospitalized patients? No. Therefore, we encourage the clinical trial for us to update the National Department of Health. Continue. Within that, what was the consultation? Okay, continue. Is the same question being answered? Sir? Okay. Go back. You see, sir? Within them, the department with human outreach and preventive medicine mental hospital, which is the Department of Family Medicine and Primary Healthcare, which I'm the head of, and the high registration, I'm also the fellow of the College of Family Physicians, which means I interact with the Canadian Society of Family Physicians, which has now put in their protocol the use of interferon as an immunomodulator, and has since had the time. These people are updating me on those bases as well. Other Western allied countries have started using interferon, and as I said, over 80,000 people have benefited from its use. It's fully behind this and is at the forefront of the development of clinical trials and Section 21 application, as the CEO has gave guidance to us. What is the SEMS position regarding SAPRA's mandate and authority? That was one of the questions. SEMS observe all governing institutions and not having representation in some of these bodies to be the invisibility and austere environment with the military fighting self-operating team. SEMS would embark on engagement to normalize relations and find common ground through an open interaction. And we have demonstrated that by holding the draft and not administering it to a single episode before we get the SAPRA approval. What is the planned consequence management for any laws broken? The investigation commissioned by the minister will come up with concrete recommendations, and we don't want to preempt whatever is going on in areas of security, peace, and so on, if there's anything wrong. In carrying its mandate to serve, we may find ourselves operating in a mode of survival instinct. Like we did, we have to survive to procure the drugs because it gets instinct in the world. Because we didn't want a situation where it is proven to work and then it is now registered and then we now don't have it, or we have got to procure it very expensively. Inadvertently overlook normal peacetime procedure without any bad intention to undermine the law in expedience. Next. Discussion with legally mandated people to update operating legal framework are under stressful and disaster management air conditions, such as the new normal brought by COVID, are approved to ensure compliance without failing on delivering on the mandate to secure the borders of the country without failing under very serious circumstances. And may I say at this stage, we as the force protectors, we were aware that unlike other departments, the military was not only fighting COVID, it was also fighting a number of threats which were coming both from the east of our border and from other areas which needed our soldiers to not sleep on their legs. And therefore, we needed to have more people not only in deployment of assisting the country internally, but in paying away those threats which were real at the time and which I'm not privileged to share with you. There are several investigations which we could have dropped the ball in some of these instances. We could be blamed now for having not been alert to secure this country. So we will secure the country at all costs, and in some instances, find ourselves where we have to face the circumstances as we do, but we will try in all matters to follow the protocol. There are several investigations and possible prosecutions underway in the SNGF on identified corrupt activities and criminalities where evidence is being collected by our intelligence and to ensure successful prosecution. And we believe that in the military environment that is able to do that, the Minister of Defense is a military veteran. It's very much very clear and not missing away on her non-tolerance of corruption within our ranks. Continue. There was a standoff between SAPRA and us. The CEO has already said the title of the story. I won't need time on this because it never happened. And then the inspectors were allowed as he said, so I won't reinvent the wheel and say, the store was open and they did an inspection as they had said. By the time the senior officers and military or police arrived, several members and the host had already left the unit. So there was no possibility of a standoff even if it was to be. SAPRA inspected medical vials. Okay, the progress made in SAPRA. This is the progress we have made in SAPRA. They inspected the medical vials. They inspected their storage conditions. We had a series of technical meetings at high level where we had to iron out the problem and also be educated by SAPRA. Corrective measures are adopted. Medicine will only, we have used to use it for vials, for cold protection and immunomodulation, and we still wish to do so, but SAPRA has told us categorically they are not going to allow us to do that except for randomized clinical trials. It's a painful pill to buy, but we are accepting and submitting ourselves to the law of SAPRA, and to that effect, we have put a clinical research team, a high-level clinical research team. We are now the synopsis for the RCT, which we got has been shared with SAPRA. We are now developing, finalizing the full protocol and the requirements for the lead investigators. As SAPRA has informed us, they want people with two first clinical trials. We're going to do that and then and go to the ethics board and have it registered so we can do what SAPRA is directing us, even though it is does not what we would have loved to finally. Not to say we don't want to do RCT. It was one of our strategies, very to secure the protection of the soldier. But we forgo that and continue with the RCT. Detailed approval processes for clinical research have been outlined to them and within, and is in the process of complying with the processes as laid to us. Next slide. Then I will hand over to General. Oh, that's it. I don't thank you. Okay. The presentation continues uninterrupted with the law-related matters, which is not my field because I'm a medical doctor.
Thank you, colleagues. Thank you very much for the presentation. Let me go back to Dr. Dabula, the Surgeon General. Is there anything you want to touch on before I move to the next presentation?
Thank you very much, Chair. No, I don't want to say anything for now. I think, again, in the interest of time, one would just wait until we have questions satisfied. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Dabula. May I now invite the CFO, Mr. Sokela, to take us through issues of procurement, whether procurement policies were followed, demand management process adhered to, the acquisition process adhered to, and whether the people who signed for the drug had the necessary delegation. Over to you, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson. The person that will do the presentation on the procurement side is General Chinese, and then I will take the question, Chairperson.
I don't hear you, CFO.
Chairperson, I was saying that the person who will do the presentation on the procurement side will be General Chance, who's falling under the law commission.
No, I'm actually asking you a question, whether you, as a CFO, Chief Financial Officer, you are satisfied that the procurement processes were followed. And then you may then take me to wherever you want to take me to.
Chairperson, when one looks in terms of the supply chain processes, indeed there are processes that were not followed in terms of the supply chain processes. So based on that, Chairperson, I think it was because of the agency of this certification that was needed. But as you correctly put it, that do I say all the processes were followed? Some of the processes were not followed correctly, Chairperson, because I also engage with the North Division as a CFO. I also engage with the North Division as well as the SG around the procurement of this nature. So I got the explanation what actually happened to the person, and indeed the processes were not followed correctly. Thank you.
Okay, that's fine. I wanted just to get you to, tell us as the CFO if you are satisfied that the supply chain processes were followed. But I hear you, you've said it, and you are now inviting the General Chalice, eh? And General Chalice, what is his designation?
It's the Major General.
Major General is a chief director within the...
Let me explain in terms of this procurement. Initially, the contractor at the North Division, it was used the contract that pertaining with Tucson, because it was pertaining with the Cuban issues. So that's why you might see that in terms of the procurement, in terms of the supply chain processes, in terms of Section A of the procurement, some of those processes were not being followed. So I think, Chairperson, when the General is explaining, presenting some of the issues, will be explaining that presentation, Chairperson.
Okay. No, I'm here to hear that. You said it's General Tanis, eh?
General Chalice, Major General Chalice, Chairperson.
Okay, that's fine. Major General, may I ask you to take us through the presentation? Yes, sir. Let me just check. Can you remove the presentation so that I can see when members indicate whether they want to speak? Can you just remove the presentation a bit? All right. Now I can see. I can see Thabo Motle's hand. Mr. Motle, honorable member.
Yes, Chair. I think the question that you asked, Chair, was not answered. We were not asking the rank, because we must be clear of the role of General Chalice. Because it's not for the first time that we are dealing with methods of procurement. And we know that it will be CLOC delegating your General Mongo, who is responsible for procurement. So if they can tell us what is the role of General Chalice in the procurement division.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Just before that, there's another hand. I'm sorry, Mr. CFO. There's a hand of Mr. Mare.
Thank you very much, Chair. I suppose this is just a interim question here. I agree with Honorable Woodley, because we need to know, also in terms of PFMA, the Public Finance Management Act is applicable on the Department of Defense and the SANDF, as far as my knowledge is. We are not, although it has been mentioned here that we are in a state of war, we know it is not a conventional war, and we also know that the Department of Defense and the SANDF was not the leading department, but COCTA were the leading department in this in this matter, and the whole fight against COVID and the state of emergency, state of disaster that we are in. So it is very important for us also to get from the CFO, who is the financial accounting officer, to tell us, you know, whether it has complied and to what extent there were transgressions also of the PFMA regulations and requirements.
Thank you very much, CFO. You have heard it yourself. When we allocate the budget, we give it to the minister, who then you know, who has two very top officials in government to help you know, spend the money and then account on the expenditure. Is the accounting officer who will have a discussion with later, and yourself, the CFO. Within you, there are delegations that go down. You will tell us whether whoever you appoint has had the necessary delegations to contract. So that's information. We want to understand the supply chain process and within now the Department of Defense. Unfortunately, we're using this incident to understand who has what role in matters such as this one. Over to you, sir.
Chairperson, the members are quite provided in terms of the PFMA, that indeed the procurement should be under the CFO, but in terms of defense, Chairperson, the procurement is not under the CFO, it's under the North Division. So I might not be praying on some of the things that it's happening under the procurement. But when it comes to the payment effect, we monitor in terms of the matching concept to make sure that all the documents are matched properly. But on the procurement process, I would not check this in to tell you what actually happened. That's why Chairperson, I was alluded that I had a meeting, because even myself, I wanted to find out exactly what happened. I had a meeting with the Chief of Logistics as well as the SG to make sure that what actually happened in that procurement of those medication, Chairperson. So the right people who can be able to tell you about the processes of procurement is the North Division of which they can be able to allude to each other. Thank you.
Thanks. You are telling this meeting that as the CFO, you had no role in this process.
Chairperson, yes, indeed, I didn't have no role at all. That's why I'm saying afterwards, I had a meeting, I arranged a meeting because of it myself. I wanted to find out exactly what happened.
Okay. No, thank you very much. I think you are clear, but we'll come back to the same issue when we deal with questions. And now General Charles is under the chief log, the chief log is in the meeting. I'm not too sure if it is not correct to ask the chief log to say something. And if he wants Charles to make a presentation and grant him time, the opportunity to invite him to log to do the presentation. Chief log?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and the members of the committee. All the questions which were raised by honorable members will be answered in the presentation. If I have to explain the designation of Major General Charlesi, Major General Charlesi is responsible for the Tucson contract. And we will give all step-by-step explanation of what were the process under the circumstances we find ourselves then under lockdown, physically on this thing, or on the importation of medicine. Thank you. Let me allow General Charlesi then to proceed.
Thank you so much. Presentation. Thank you so much, General. Over to you, General Charles.
Good afternoon, Chair and the members of the committee. Good afternoon, Minister of Defence and military veterans and the members of Defence in attendance. As explained by my boss in this case, Jaran Muli, we will make an attempt to clarify some of the things which have been raised by the committee. I need to also say that South African government and Cuban government have a bilateral agreement on defense-to-defense relationship, and on the basis of that,
there's something happening on the screen. I'm not too sure it's on this side only. It's just gone back, and I
check the camera as well.
It's frozen.
Either I have the face or the presentation on the screen. It's either I have the face or the presentation on the screen. I will not allow the screen to be blank.
Can you hear me? Am I audible?
Yes, you are audible. Mr. Musa, I'm not too sure if your hand is still up or what. If you talk about okay, sure. No, thank you so much. Right, over to you, Team Defense, General Charles. You were audible. My apologies for interrupting you. Over to you, sir. They've all disappeared. Let me just check. Colleagues, I don't know if it's I'm the one who has disappeared.
No, sir. You are still visible and audible. 100%.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Yeah. And so we're still connected.
No, I think let us put hands down.
And fellow of the mountain is also around the see that.
Okay.
think there is the connectivity problem.
Shepherdson.
Yes, Minister. Yes, Minister.
I thought I heard
that maybe we should have another session then to interrogate this, because this is not just a two-question presentation and a three-question presentation. There are so many things that even the representative of the department and the Surgeon General has said that is actually shocking to hear from his mouth, and quite clearly, you know, I wonder what SAHPRA and the World Health Organizations and the Department of Health's response will be, you know, to things like that, because we clearly need to hear their responses as well, because it seems like we're living in two separate worlds. So yeah, that's I think where we are standing. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Marais, we are still an hour away from 1 o'clock, and I think it's still 2:80 for me to make that determination that we would not be able to have all the questions asked and the replies given, but we'll make a call at the right time. Can I check if the department is back? The team that has General Chavis. General Chavis. Mr. Mazur.
Ms. Modise.
Oh, Ms. Modise.
Okay, fine, thanks. I was wondering if probably we can proceed once we're waiting for the general to come back. We can, in the meantime, start engaging the presentations that we've already done. And then at the time when we're able to establish the activity, and then we can get to the
They are back, Ms. Modise. I can see their presentation on the screen. I can also see some voice.
Okay,
thank you so much, Ms. Modise. General Mbuli and General Chalice, Okay, may then take us through.
Thank you, Chair. Our humble apologies and disappointment for that technical issue. Our computer just froze, and we apologize for that. And I think that we will be able to speed the process and catch up with the time loss. As I was indicating, Chair, is that there's an agreement between the Cuba, Cuban government and South African government on defense-to-defense relationship. And as a result of that, the contract was signed for Project Tucano, and this was born because of the wanted to get rid of the outsourcing that they were battling with. These contracts, there are two of them, which have been signed with the Cuban Defense Force. The first one is number T. TI-17-001 in South Africa to provide professional, technical, and medical services. And the second one is TI-17-002 that provides services of professional vocational training with the Department of Defense of Cuba. And the reason why we are actually addressing this issue here is that there was a question that said why the contracts were actually signed before the delivery of the consignment of 27 of April to be exact. What happened is that once the contract has been signed, we'll then look at the flight activities which needs to be taken, especially military operational activity. The real contracts are to say that they were the operational level of things. Once the principal agreement on the activities, then a supplementary document to the main contract will then be drafted by both parties, and they will agree in principle. Once that has taken place, then in Cuba a contract will be signed, and it will be sent to South Africa for verification of the correctness of the content, and it will be signed then by a party in South Africa, duly appointed by the Minister of Defense at operational level of the military. And only then that a payment can actually be effected. And we will refer to that document as a supplement. We'll refer to it as a supplement. The process is that these documents must be signed, or these supplements must be signed in their original form, which implies that they will have to be brought to South Africa as original documents. And now the problem here is the distance between South Africa and Cuba is very long, and also we don't always have a diplomatic post that actually leaves Cuba to South Africa at the time that we want that to happen. Now, in this case that we are talking about now, the consignment that arrived in Cuba, so a regional document had to come with the consignment or the 27th of April, which was signed on the 28th of April, to complete the legality of the document and the consignment. Now, we are referring to the consignment, and I think this question that was raised is that the order in the importation of the drug without document to import the drug to South Africa. And I think actually through Lieutenant Kennedy and Disney have already deliberated on the act, which directs processes to be followed in importing pharmaceutical products and we bear reference to the SM being the subsidiary of government perceive itself not in the same light as supporting pharmaceutical companies or wholesalers. And his judgment through his exempt in military to military arguments of bio technology products, especially as it relates to interferon in this case. Now I also want to, before I carry on, to take the members back to the to 27, I mean to 27 of April. Well, that's what we are talking about here, especially. We are not in August last year, we are not in June last year, we are not in February this year, we are in April last year, and the prevailing circumstances of April last year. And we are at the point where Chief of the President instructed the Army to put boots on the ground. That's where we are. And the military in that case swung into a planning process of employment of these forces and protection of these forces. That's where we are, and this slide is actually addressing that. And we regarded this, as you know, the military in this case has the sole capability of chemical and biological warfare. We were dealing with the enemy that we didn't know how it was going to behave, and it was not known to us as well. And what we then did is that military council took a decision to say this seemed to be a biological warfare problem that we are dealing with. And SEMS was tasked to look for a solution to it, to make sure that our soldiers on the ground are actually protected. Then they found the interferon, which they regarded as not a treatment, but a prolifelactic biological product to deal with a biological threat to address a military problem, which we are actually facing at the time. And I also need to say that this error in our judgment as military was clarified in SAPRA. It was clarified in SAPRA. And there's an ongoing inspection, that's why which we allowed SAPRA to go through and so on, to clarify this and to make sure that its defense is in line with the legislation as discussed before. And therefore we view this interferon as I indicated, therefore interferon was never viewed as a line item. This is important to actually take note of. We never viewed it as a line item. If it was a line item, we would have gone through the procurement processes. But we viewed it as a support to a fight against perceived military biological threats. And it came together with a Cuban medical brigade as part of the services which we requested from them. And therefore, the issue of us embarking on a procurement process of this interferon as a line item that is overruled by the fact that it became a medical service to us, provided by Cuban military personnel. Regarding the importation of the drug, when this drug arrived in South Africa on the 27th of April at Badal Group Airport, we took it through the processes of hearing with customs, excise duties, at Bowen Tabo. And the documents to that effect are actually with us, and I took note of what Chairperson said, that ASA is probably looking for the documents, but we have them, we've made them available. After the meeting, we will have a meeting with ASA, and we will provide the supporting documents. Now, what happened on the 27th of April? We received the interferon together with the military medical personnel from Cuba as one medical service which we requested from Cuba. And therefore, once again, issues of the procurement process that the members are saying we ought to have followed, we do not regard that as a line item, Mr. Ferro. Now what happened is that on the 28th of April, a document was signed, a contract, a supplement was signed by the DOD, and then we appointed AB Logistics as a clearing agent for us. AB Logistics engaged the customs at that time, because at that time we were, the airport was still fully operational, and it was not seized as it was seized in June and in August. But nobody was allowed to visit the airport at that time. Now what happened is that after the clearance was done in April, we took all the documents, we filed them, and then we waited for whatever had to be happened. But in June, the situation was different. At that time, SAA was retrenching its members, and the airport was closed. So we could not go to the airport and actually clear the consignment, the second consignment with customs. But the package of the medication with quantity are with us. The receiving and storage of the medication, we have those documents with us, and we will provide when we have a meeting after this meeting. Now, because of the closure of the airport, we ended up not getting the actual clearance of the second and the third consignment. But all other documents, except for the customs clearance, we don't have. I mean, all other documents we have, except for the customs clearance, and we will be providing that. The transportation of this, we've got a proof on how it was transported and how it was headed over to Sam's Depot and how it is stored. And I think that part was cleared also by AGSA. We need to emphasize that on the next slide. We need to emphasize that there was no need for us to embark then on this procurement process as indicated or directed by the PFMA in this case, to acquire the interferon as subject matter. But we acquired a medical statement based on the contract we have with Cuban Defense Force. And this was so because we were faced with the operational military problem that we wanted to address at that point in time. Now, there's a question that was raised, what is the progress of the Minister's investigation regarding Mr. Sarovi? The Minister of Defense and Minister of Veterans have signed the terms of reference for the investigation. And a copy of this has been given to AFSA. The ministerial task team has already been appointed to actually deal with that. All we need to do now is finalize, is to make sure that the members of the task team are they are properly vetted because of the sensitivity of what we are to do. I would like to conclude by actually saying that on behalf of Chief Lock, that COVID-19 presented a huge challenge where there is no single department that was never affected or effected adjustment in order to function under the new normal, which nobody understood, which nobody knew how it would look like. And we think that lessons should be learned on especially where there are areas which need improvement. So we do take cognizance of the fact that there are areas where we sort of flouted processes as deemed by the members of the committee. But we are also saying, as far as we are concerned, we were responding to an operational military requirement as directed by the commander-in-chief. SAGF delivered as a leader of operations to repatriate from hotspots and to serve in support of departments like, for instance, SAPS and immigration officers along the borders of South Africa. and this we termed as of Notella, but we also went further to deal with the hotspots in South Africa as we have them in the Eastern Cape and also in the Western Cape. Now, members of the portfolio committee would also understand sometimes that military, especially when we are faced with the war, during the war planning and execution, we can always be viewed and judged harshly with the benefit of a hindsight and the perspective that would be existing during this time. But during wartime, our primary responsibility as military professionals is to reduce the negative impact of the collateral damage on our operations. We save the lives of our soldiers as a primary thing to us. We save the life of our soldiers and we eliminate the military problem that we have. And SANDF promotes discipline and professionalism within itself and is ready to evolve from his one part of to save our civilian and we subject ourselves to the oversight as given to us. And we also say that may the peace of self may the state of a self-correct be afforded without prosecution that might basically distract what we are trying to build as a department. We also indicate that we are ready to and open to any remedial appeal. And the chairperson indicated that there are outstanding documents which are required by UIC, ATSA. And we undertake to make sure that those documents are actually provided to ATSA when we finish with the meeting. And we have them where we are seated in. Sorry, I want to thank you and submit presentation at the time.
Very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister Chadis, for the presentation on behalf of General Mbuli. General Mbuli, you would have the last word on this. Major General Chadis says, South Africa was faced, was facing a biological warfare. That is his point of departure. He says that at the time when the world was viewing this pandemic differently, and also that there is no evidence to suggest that COVID-19 virus is a biological warfare. We are aware that there is that conspiracy theory, and I thought it had been ruled out. But I thought this was the terrain of the Surgeon General, the top doctor within the military, to enter into the space. And when he responds, he would tell us his view about this particular assertion that Major General Chavez is raising. He's not a medical doctor. We've just received the presentation from the medical doctors. That is Dr. Tabula and Dr. Nisa. I may be wrong that he's not a medical doctor, but he was not presented as a medical doctor. All right, but anything concerning the health of the soldiers is the responsibility of General Tabula. So General Tabula will have to comment on this. It's a serious statement that you are making. The minister is in the meeting. At the right time, he will come and just give us his her side of the story. All right, be that as it may. And then the last point is his closing remark, that they still have not given the AG the outstanding documents. And it's how many days now since we requested that this must be done? It's about 14 days. AG, you are still in the meeting. Can you confirm that since the last time we asked the department to finish you the statement, you still have not received the statement? We wanted that to happen between before this meeting today. Can you just comment on that, because it's in the minutes?
Chairperson, yes, I can confirm that we have not received the information yet. We have also written to the department to again request the information, so I can confirm that we have not received anything.
Yeah, Dr. Tabula will then tell us when he replies why, when we requested that this information must be furnished to the AG via the office of the sector, that has not happened. You know, I think that time will come when we deal with the questions. Colleagues, now is question time. And over to you, colleagues. And I will just take the hands as I see them on the screen. I'll start with Mr. I don't know how you want to deal with this, whether you want questions to be posed across, or you want to limit it to the first presentation. Once we are done with it, we move to the second and we move to the third. But I don't want to restrict you. I leave it to your own devices. I'll start with you, Mr. Mare, and then Mr. Mafanya. Those are the two hands I've seen so far. Mr. Mare?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yeah, I must say I've got...
Sorry,
I've
sir?
Got yes, sir?
I'm trying to raise my hand here on my gadget. I'm unable to. Kindly note my name as well.
Yes, all right. So it's Mare, Mafanya, Modise.
I've also raised my hand, Chair.
Mule, and Shelembe. Right, let me just check once again. I think that is it. In that order, Mare, Mafanya, Modise, Mutla, and Shelembe, in that order. Thank you very much, honorable members. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. If I can start with the, as the presentations was given to us, in terms of SAPRA, I would obviously love to hear SAPRA's response to the presentation by the department and CLOP and the SA Medical Health Services, Military Health Services, which is actually quite a total different view than what SAPRA has given us. So obviously, I mean, because they must either agree with that assertion of them, or they must give us the facts and the realities. For me, it is very important to find out in their presentation, they've referred to the Section 21 applications, and then they've also referred to Section 22 that is applicable. Now, am I correct to assume that this Inferon Alpha medicine falls under the Schedules 5, 6, 7, and 8 of Section 22A specifically, and then also refer to Section 29 and Section 30 of the Act, the Medicines Act, which clearly indicates what must happen and what is a transgression in terms of the purchase and the buy of unregistered and unauthorized medicine. Then I also want to ask, they've indicated that they might approve for clinical trials. Now, how big is a clinical trial? Because what the department has told us that they have brought this for 23,000 people, over a period of 2 years, they want to provide this to the 23,000 people. Is that a realistic size of a clinical trial? And is a clinical trial ideal to have it in a specific area like the Defence Force, or is a clinical trial, the value of a clinical trial, that it must be broad in terms of citizens of a country, and not only for a specific group. I also want to find out whether the Department of Defense and the SANDF, specifically the Military Health Services, are they subject to the rules and regulations and the laws that SAPRA has given us. In other words, can they decide, as they have now told us, that they don't see it necessary to do applications? And can an existing contract for instance, professional services with the Cubans be extended to include medicine? I also want to find out clearly the objective of the SANDF was to give this medicine to soldiers last year in April, May, June, July, August. Was any of these medicine used to give to people except for the 10 vials without authority and approval? And if so, is that acceptable? And you know, what must they as the regulatory body do if something like that has happened? Then I also want to find out, they have indicated that, you know, the SANDF, their so-called import, which was not import, was a clear transgression. What do they do in cases of a clear transgression? Do they open a case with the prosecuting authorities, the SAPS or NPA? And if so, what normally happens in a case like this? Do they then seize the medicine, or do they have certain you know, procedures and processes, you know, over this medicine to make sure that it is not used without their authority and without their approval? Because quite clearly the SANDF has told us just now by both the CELOC person as well as Military Health Services that they don't regard themselves to be subjected to SAPRA. Then I also want to find out, does the application for approval and authority, is it prior to import, or is it a general practice that it can be done post the importation of such medicine? And I specifically want their response, because quite clearly the first application according to them was in August, while according to the SANDF, General Choki's letter, there was three shipments, April, June, April, July, and August. So it was months and months and months after the first shipment arrived that they submitted their first application. Is that the right way to do it? Is that the normal procedure to do it? Or is that plainly unacceptable and not approved? And then I also just want to proceed further with your indulgence, that I want to find out from the Military Health Services, our Surgeon General. We have heard now story, and I was actually shocked when I compared the presentation and the comments with that of SAPRA. And I want to ask the Surgeon General, I believe either he or his Deputy Surgeon General was always present at the Military Command Council's meeting where this decision was taken to import the drugs. My information is that
Before you give us your information, you've asked the question whether he was present when the decision was taken.
Yeah. And part of that question is also, the information is that neither the two of them nor General Ford was in agreement to import these drugs, because they knew at that time that the drugs was unauthorized and unregistered in South Africa for the purpose that they wanted to do it. So can he tell us whether he now has changed his mind, and whether him as the accounting officer of the SA Military Health Services will accept responsibility and accountability for the decision to bring in this drugs. So his opinion will be very, very important.
Mr. Marais, I will come back for a second round. You can see that if I allow you to go on, all they do is to respond to your questions, and that will be the end of the meeting. And yet if we give each other turns, at least everyone will walk away saying, I had at least I expressed a view on the matter. Otherwise,
I appreciate what you're saying, and I know that the time is of essence, but if I don't get the opportunity to ask my questions, because the important ones I'm still coming to.
No, you need to prioritize. I'll come back to Mr. Marais. Can I take these others? I mean, I've given you 2 minutes already. Thank you so much. And Mr. Mafanya?
Thank you very much, Chair, and the presentation that were given to us. I've got quite a few, but I think, as you say, that will give us a second round. Probably we'll do that. Now, I'll come to SAFRA, because it is mentioned that they rejected the invitation as well as the administering of the drug. And then later on, month later, they discovered that the drugs were already in the country. And voluntarily, they went to make some investigations with the accompanied by the Hawks. Now, as the regulatory body, seeing that there is a transgression on their part, why did they at that time take action? Because the action was taken after the drug was discovered to be in the country, where damage control was being executed at that level. So as a regulatory body that has got the powers to stop unlicensed products to come into the country, why at that time when they saw the drug was already in the country, having informed you also by the media? So that is where I would like to come to find out actually what has been their role when they found that things were not done properly, and what was the consequences thereafter. Now, I'll go to the next one. After having gone through checking the drug, they say the drugs were stored adequately. And then looking at what is the scenario that is happening today, is that some of the drugs are way beyond the 2 to 8 degrees Celsius. They are in the minus range, 40, 50, up to 70. So adequately, does it mean they complied, or is it just that they were in a storeroom, a cold storage? And the other part is that on the issue of the police, we are not in a military state. We are in a civilian state, even if when the president wears the uniform, but it remains a civilian president. Now, the police, the nurses, the soldiers are the frontline workers. Now, does it justify that all departments, because of those challenges that we can have, a situation where each department operates in isolation of government as a department, then what prompted the SANDF to unilaterally begin to import the Cuban drug? Whilst we are confronted with a wide range of drugs, why specifically having they gone to other countries as well to see the validity of the drug? Then on the issue of biological warfare, I don't buy it. The world knows that the disease started from China, went to the USA, Italy, Britain, Spain. Now, taking the consideration of the time frames when things were happening in that fashion, already we knew that the disease could be transmitted by interactions amongst people and nations. So later on, there's this desire to come to say no. The army, the soldiers, the SADF had a notion that we are under attack, and biological warfare as some of the issues that I mentioned I really don't buy that, but I need further clarification that even when the world, even the organization WHO was articulating these positions, even before they ordered the drug, already we were briefed from time to time. The head of command council also was also briefing us. Now, some of the things they tend to tell us that the soldiers, the army, the SANDF, does things on their own without even other departments, in particular the Department of Health, which all of us in the country are listening to. And there are experts as well, professors in the Department of Health, who are also advising the ministry, including the Minister of Defense. So that is some of the questions. So I don't want to go too much deeper into that because you said, including the number of units, 900,000 units. While we were speaking with the problem of the India, a million units that had to come from. From India. Then here we are, Air Department. Talking to air government, or whatever it may be, but probably the minister would also explain how that interaction went about. But as far as I know, she's also surprised into some of the things and allegations and then even the procurement deficiencies, because the CFO also said I was not involved. Then we absolve your responsibilities to your staff members who asked to attend to that. So we'll listen and then we'll come back. Thank you.
Okay.
You are muted, Chair. You are muted.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mare. I'm saying I've recognized your hand, Professor Rees, but I will take it when we deal with the replies. Can I take the hands of the members first, and then once that will be the first round. After the first round, I'll ask for replies before we go to the second round. In that, so that's the output for today. Ms. Modise. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. On SAPRA, they would have mentioned that there were a couple of attempts to meet with the colonel who was in charge, the officer commanding who was in charge at the time, for a meeting that was scheduled for the third of the month, but eventually happened later on. They made mention that the colonel would have said that there's a meeting scheduled to meet with the principal. Now, I'm interested in finding out, did that the meeting between the colonel and the principal happen? And if so, if it did happen, what was the final word from the principal regarding this process? Secondly, Chair, on the bulk stock application, it is mentioned that it was rejected based on the fact that not adequate information was provided. We want to understand that from the department, you are then being given an opportunity to submit information for your application. What were the difficulties that made you not to follow the correct processes and submit the full information that was required so that the drug can then be approved for the use? Because failure for you to do that, the drug then was then provided to one patient instead of all the other 23,000 forces that you have wanted them to protect. So you have prevented that from happening because due to lack of information, therefore there was no approval for your bulk application. Now, I want to find out then that since it was only provided to one force, has that impacted your operations on the ground? Or the duties of that you then embarked on during the process of lockdown and pandemic. What has happened then? Did you then do an analysis that since you were unable to give this drug that you urgently needed,
so urgently needed and major to bypass the law for you to acquire it. Now that we are unable to give it to the members as it was needed for, what then happened after? Were you unable to perform your duties efficiently? How many soldiers were affected thereon? How many have died? And how many affected until today? I just want to find out here. Thirdly, the fact that the drug was not authorized to be used for prevention of COVID-19. And because testing were not done, why was the SANDF so confident that this drug will ensure that the forces on the ground are not affected or infected by this pandemic? It is said that it is not meant for prevention. If it is not meant for prevention, it was only meant for, it was some sort of an immune booster, if I may say this. Now, if it's an immune booster, it does not mean that members will not eventually contract COVID-19. Now, the very same need to say you want to prevent the members from not getting infected, they could have been infected with or without the drug. It would have depended on how much strong the immune system of these forces on the ground is. The Surgeon General says they did not have any intended consequences to break the law. The law was broken here. But my question is, when you were breaking the law, did you consider the consequences of doing such? Lastly, Chair, let me not also take too long. Okay. No, let me stop there, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Honorable Mushe.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. I've got a few straightforward questions. I think the first presenter, the family medical doctor, who said they acknowledged that they have to go through SAPRA for approval. That is why they then seek approval before utilization of this drug. But the question that if they knew, why didn't they seek approval even prior? They knew, because that's what he said. He said they knew. It's unlike when they did not know. We understand that they did not know, but they knew, and they decided not to follow the process. Second question is on Project Tusano that is being used as a contract. My question with that to that is to whether Project Tusano as a contract has delegated powers to procure or not. Like yourselves have got the, we know for a fact that we've got a person who's responsible for overall procurement, but there are delegations that are assigned to SAMS, are assigned to, through SAMS are assigned to military hospitals. Because these are drugs that are primarily used by some. Did some send a request to General Charles to procure, or was it done under their procurement as some? Or what happened? Because I don't understand what General Charles was saying, because he's talking more about the contract that they have with the government, which is not a problem. It's a progressive
a contract that seeks to empower and assist the South African Defence Force. But I want to believe that contract itself, it has conditions and clauses that articulate how procurement are done. So who is the responsible for those? Was it in this case some sending request to General Charles to procure? If, and that can only happen if they have got the delegation to procure. If they don't have those delegations, when they are given a request, they must follow the processes through the relevant people who got the authority and delegated power to undertake procurement of such nature. So if that can be clarified, I'll be very happy. Lastly, on the basis of them, their acknowledgement that they knew that the approval were necessary to be sought, why did they procure so many vials, versus the number of soldiers that they have? Because if one soldier is, if one is to 10, and you take that number, it's obviously more than 73,000 soldiers that we know that the South African National Defence Force has. Why so much? Why you knew that you still needed to get approval? Because you could have procured the first batch and dealt with it and not even proceed to the second and third without soliciting approval. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. Now the last person is Mr. Shelembe. But before I ask Mr. Shelembe, this meeting, I request that it extends until 1:30. If I get concurrence, I would then request Brian to ensure that we are granted time and space to continue from 1 to 1:30. Agreed? Thank you so much. No objection.
Yes, sir.
All right, Mr. Shelembe.
Yes, I just want to indicate, sir, the colleagues from
Sapa
would unfortunately need to leave at
1:00. All right, that's fine. We'll prioritize you when we give you the questions. But it does look like we'd need a sitting. So you heard that members would want to have a second bite. So we need another sitting, but we'll alert you when we would sit again. Mr. Shelembe?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, my concern or the question will relate to the issue of essential services, because the soldiers are not different from members of the SAPS, and they are not different from members under Department of Health, like nurses or healthcare officers. Now, if I look at that, they say the Department of Health did not attend the Cuban webinar, and the reason is not given. Why did the Department of Health fail to attend such an important meeting, which was to discuss the issue of that drug? And if maybe they can give me the main reason why the Department of Health, as they are responsible to ensure that everybody or those people who were working under essential services were protected when there was such a drug that was available to be used. It is also noted the meeting, or an informal meeting, was held in the office of the Minister of Health.
You see, Mr. Schellenberg, can we not focus on the people who are not present in the meeting? You're asking questions but do not get the answers. In view of time, can we economize? The Department of Health is not here to deal with the first question, and the Minister is also not here to deal with the questions. With the question that you are about to pose. I know exactly what question you are about to pose. So,
I'm here, Chairperson.
Please, yes, no, I'm talking about the Minister of Health. It's referring to the Minister of Health.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Well, I don't know what's going to happen. I understand the background of your question, but I'm worried that maybe we may leave some stone unturned in this matter, because once the department mentioned that the officials of the Department of Defense are saying they did not attend, but they must give us their reason. What was the reason for them not to attend if they do have? If there were no reason given, I think I'll be fine with that. And to Chairperson, well, if they say the officials from the Department of Defense had to meet in the office, in the office of the Minister of Health, was the Minister of Defense aware, because he's here to say he was aware of that informal meeting that took place in the office of Minister of Health? So I'll appreciate this. Chairperson will try our best to ensure that, no stone is left unturned, so that, the truth in this matter is disclosed. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much for that. Colleagues, I think we are not going to do justice, but let me, the team SAPRA will leave at 1 o'clock. Let me prioritize them. Professor Reyes, you had your hand up.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister and colleagues on the committee and for the SNDF. Thank you very much for these presentations. I'm going to just talk a little bit about how we make decisions globally and locally on drugs. And then Dr. Simetti is going to talk about some of the questions that were raised on SAPRA's procedures. And I think just to give everyone a bit of background, apart from chairing the board of SAPRA, I also am on what's called the NEMLEC Committee for the country, which is the Essential Medicines Committee. That committee reviews, has a special committee which I'm part of, which reviews all medicines, successful, unsuccessful, that have been looked at for either COVID prevention or treatment. And it has a very strict scientific methodology and comes out with recommendations. I'm also on the Ministerial Advisory Committee, which similarly can make recommendations on drugs. I'm also an advisor to the World Health Organization. So at the beginning of the pandemic, one of the things, and one of the colleagues who presented also said this, was that we were looking for existing drugs that might have a role to play in COVID, either in prevention or treatment. And there was extensive work that was done on looking at this globally. These drugs, many of them went into clinical trials. And interferons, there are different types, but many of those were evaluated. Some of those were evaluated. They were considered for prevention studies, and they were evaluated, as Tumi presented in her earlier presentation, for treatment studies. South Africa has also been involved in both, and continues to be involved in studies looking at different drugs and obviously vaccines for prevention, but also different drugs for treatment. So the first thing I want to say is that, I think we all agree that the pandemic has posed a unique challenge, and I think people everywhere have been desperate to look for better drugs for both prevention and treatment. And apart from vaccines, which we're very hopeful about, clearly, there haven't been really any drugs that have come up very positively in the prevention arena. So to acknowledge that this is a gap, our therapeutic gap is very real. However, in order to fill that gap, we need to find drugs, vaccines, etc., that are proven in properly designed clinical trials to prove that they work. And unfortunately, many of the drugs that looked hopeful when we looked at the drugs using artificial intelligence, in fact, globally, to say what looks like it's going to work.
Pretoria, Asian Defense in Pretoria, Chibiliga, please. Can you mute your mic, please? You are interrupting the meeting.
Thank you, Chair. We have a... Thank you. So unfortunately, many of these drugs that did look hopeful from the laboratory, when trials were actually undertaken, just didn't prove to have the potential that we hoped. And unfortunately, interferon was one of these, as we mentioned in a very large trial that South Africa has been part of, called the Solidarity Study, convened by WHO for treatment, showed that the drug didn't work. And we have no evidence on prevention. So I think that the total sympathy with everyone who is desperate to find solutions. I think the important thing, and not just the measure, we'll come onto this, is the way to do this is in the context of properly designed, rigorous clinical trials. So unfortunately, what is a serious problem is if we start to roll out products where we simply don't have the evidence, because people can be misled in terms of prevention. They can change behavior on the assumption that they're protected. And people might, for example, if we mislead them in the terms of prevention, might be reluctant to have a vaccine, which we have got proven evidence for many vaccines now that they work. So I think truly understanding why people feel desperate, particularly people who are dealing with frontline workers, but an appeal, I think, from SAPRA and as a scientist, that the way to do this is through a well-designed clinical trial. I'll stop there and, if with your permission, hand over to Dr. Samete.
Dr. Samete, thank you very much, Prof.
Thank you very much, Chen. So I'll answer the questions that are now posed. I'm not going to speak much to the clinical ones, as Kathleen has spoken to them. I just want to indicate that the section that was referred to as the Section 21, and it may have been an error from the military team to say Section 22, because 22 is for licensing, but I could be wrong. So Section 21 is the one I spoke to. Section 22 talks to a number of matters that also include licensing. So maybe if I can give more clarity on what the question there was. So there was then a question around, do we give approval of under Section 21 prior or post-implication? So we always give approval prior, because what would typically happen is you would need then that authorization for the product to be released at Port Health. And also we would then know prior to it arriving in the country that it has been approved, and we can then also assist if there are any challenges at Port Health. And in terms of what we did as SAPRA, you will note that we indicated that we became aware of this early in November. The first meeting that we had with the SNDF was with the responsible pharmacist on the 11th of November. So I do believe that we acted expeditiously. And again, because we were of the view that we would have successful discussions with Colonel May, we then agreed that we would rather have these discussions so that we get further context. So in our first engagement, we didn't go with the host. It was just the inspectorate team on the 11th of November when they met with the responsible pharmacist and then subsequently tried to meet with Colonel May. It's only in January, when we went on the 29th of January, that we then went with the host. And as I said, this is standard procedure. And what would typically happen is, we would inspect the consignment, we would take the consignment and inspect it, take it to the labs to make sure that, is it still in good quality. And depending on the outcome of the discussions, and that's why it was important that we sit down and we had a discussion with the colonel and their respective principals, we would then open a case. So we were not at that point, because before you open a case of investigation, you need to get all the information. So this meeting of the 3rd of February, we were hoping that this is where we would be able to get a lot more detail. However, that meeting was cancelled that morning. So as at today, we have not been able to meet with the colonel. However, I've indicated that we've met with the Surgeon General and the other team, and this is, you know, where we are now at the moment. So in terms of, yes, so I've spoken to the issue about the transgression that we would typically open a case, and that the application has to be done prior and properly then address the issues around the clinical study. Thanks, Chair. I hope, oh, in terms of court storage, so these drugs are kept between 2 and 4 degrees. For my inspectorate team, they do not need to be at minus 80 or anything like that. So we did inspect the temperature that they were stored at, which is adequate for this product. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thank you very much. Any other from the... Any other hand from the from Sabra?
Chair, can I just ask Sabra the question of mine with regards to the size of the clinical trials, 23,000, if that is a typical clinical trial size?
Yes, that was omitted. Can you deal with it?
Perhaps I could come in there. The answer would be would depend on the endpoint that you're looking at in a clinical trial. So if the endpoint is to prevent infection, you also have to look at the risk profile of the people that are involved in the trial. So are they high risk and highly exposed, low risk and low exposure? If the endpoint is to prevent disease, then it's a different estimation. So the trials can have just a few thousand depending on those endpoints, but as you saw with vaccine trials for prevention, they can have 20, 30, 40,000. So they can be indeed very large, but it does depend on defining the endpoint of a prevention study. I'm only going to limit myself to prevention studies here. If one of the mentions was of early disease, that there's a gap in terms of treatment of early disease in the first presentation. Indeed, that is true. Early disease, however, is proving to be a very difficult target. It's difficult to identify people early and to get them to enroll. And these studies that people have really struggled with, there is one fairly sizable early disease study going on currently in South Africa, evaluating some other drugs, not interferon, but some other drugs that, again, as I said, have been identified as having potential from the laboratory analysis that I described. But early disease and progression of early disease is also going to have quite a sizable study into probably into the thousands.
Thank you very much. There's one other question that was not adequately dealt with on the action. The remedies that you have in terms of the law. if the law prohibits sale of an unregistered drug, it means that it makes it unlawful to be in possession of the said drug. Right? We're not just taking one assignment, consignment. We're talking three consignments, quantities, numbering, 900,000, 970,885. That was the original quantity before the term were used. Now, you have not spoken to the remedies. You went with the to inspect. That's what the law demands. When you suspect that there is a drug, unregistered drug, you dispatch your inspectors.
I think the noise empowers you to do even more than that. Can you just talk to the remedies so that we know your role when we have unregistered drug in our roads? Thank you so much, Auntie.
Thank you. No, you're correct in that when you do hold a drug in your possession that is unregistered, that is indeed unlawful and is against the Medicines Act. So what we would then typically do in any situation, we would go and inspect the facility. And again, these are always discussions with the respective entity. And based on the discussions, we confiscate the product. This product would then go through safety assessments to make sure that what's in there is indeed what's in there. And then we would then open a case, and there's then an investigation, a detailed investigation in terms of what then led to the product eventually arriving without it being authorized. So in this case, and that's why we continued to engage with the colonel to ensure that we can then have this discussion and ensure that we are able to follow this process. In all of these instances, there is indeed a need for us to be engaging with a specific entity. In this case, we were not able to engage with the entity because we've tried to meet with the colonel, numerous times we battled. And the meeting of the third that was supposed to happen was then going to a meeting where we then say, how do we then address this? So that's what we would typically do. Thank you.
I consider that meeting to be a key meeting.
So that meeting did not take place?
If that meeting has not taken place, and what we hear is that you have found each other, what does it mean? There was also a suggestion of you releasing a statement. What does that mean when you have not gotten to the bottom of the problem?
Sure. So what that means is when we engaged then, as I indicated, with the Surgeon General, it was clear that if you remember from his presentation, he was saying he was trying to provide information to SAHPRA, and we were saying we were not receiving the information at SAHPRA. So one remedy in this case, particularly because it's a product that is registered, as I indicated, for other indications in the country, and it's a product that, at least based on the initial assessment, we would still need to go and do a detailed inspection, has been stored adequately in those conditions. The other option is then for it to be applied under clinical trial study, and that's the option that we have put then on the table for them to consider.
Can you spare us another 10 minutes just to check if there are more hands, questions? I'm trying to gauge whether we need another meeting. If there are more questions that are specific to the entity, they want to be released at 1. I know it's 1:05 now. Can you grant us 5-10 more minutes?
We'll try and change it, but we're running very late. Okay, let's see. But I think probably another meeting would suffice.
Sure. All right, colleagues, to this entity and this entity alone, are there any more questions? Thabo, is your hand up?
No, Chair, no, I think you can release them. We'll then determine with the, we are left with 25 minutes, Chair, and get the responses and determine the need going forward.
Okay, that's fine. Chairperson,
just part of my one question was with regards to section 22, whether this medicine under discussion is something that will fall into the category applicable that section 22 is referring, because if so, then there are certain remedies that must follow if those articles have been transgressed. So I just want to find out from SAHPRA or whether it is a drug that is not classified so sensitive as 22 is referring to. Thank you.
Right, and can you deal with that question, and then we'll release you after that?
Yeah,
Thank you. So I'm not sure if you're referring to Section 21, which we use to give emergency authorization, because Section 22 speaks to other matters. Maybe let me just get clarity. Are you referring to the Section 21 that's utilized to give authorization for unregistered medicine?
I'm specifically referred to Section 22A11 of the Act that says no person shall import or export any specified Schedule 5, 6, 7 or 8 substance or other substance of medicine prescribed for that purpose unless a permit has been issued. And then Section 29 says it is an offence to contravene Section 22A, and then Section 30 says penalties is a fine or imprisonment not exceeding 10 years. That is what I'm referring to.
Yes, Doctor.
Okay. No, thank you. Thanks for that clarity. So yes, indeed. I mean, we would apply the Act as it's written. So if you have brought in a product that is unauthorized, you in essence have breached these conditions of the Medicines Act.
I think, Mr. Marais, the inquiry stops at Section 21. There was no authorization. It doesn't go beyond Section 22.
In terms of the CEO's response is the whole Act applies between 22 as well.
All right, I think they've responded. Let's leave it at that for now. Anyway, we'll have another round of this meeting. I'm sure next time they'll come ready to deal with those specific provisions. All right, we release you, Team Sabra. But before I do so, I think it would not be fair to the minister to release you without having listened to her, at least on the issues, Sabra, and the minister will not deal with other issues. Minister?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you, honorable members. Thank you, Chair of the Board of Sabra. Chairperson, I must say that I welcome this interaction. I welcome it because I think all of us have learned from the both presentations of the members of SEN and those of SAPRA. My observation, Chairperson, and I'm raising this My observation is that there's been a problem of communication between SEMS and SAPRA. In fact, my view is that they've been speaking past each other. I'm raising this, Chair, because indeed, I think as the political authority of the department, it is proper that I should say I must take political responsibility. Now, in one of the meetings 2 or 3 weeks ago, I'm sorry that I don't have the date here, Dr. Reed will confirm that at a meeting of the National Command Council, when all of these issues were coming out about us and interference, I then raised the matter at the National Command Council, which she attended, just to get an understanding from her as to whether what exactly the nature of the problem is between SAPRA and SEMS in relation to the registration of interferon. Indeed, Dr. Ruiz explained to the meeting that the problem we have is that because the issue here was if the WHO recognizes interferon, what could be the problem between us and SAPRA with regards to the registration of interferon? And the response was that no, the only reason why the SAPRA has not registered interferon, it is because even the trials that were conducted by the World Health Organization were at a very small scale and therefore could not allow for them to make a determination that to allow a determination that SEM can continue to administer interferon. Now, I was raising this advisedly, Chair, because the issue has been all over and I needed clarity because I talked to the defensor. Indeed, I was aware that they do have interferon. In terms of quantities, not necessarily. But even when finally I raised matters with regards to the quantity, right, they were able to provide me with an explanation which was that you can't administer interferon to a soldier or whoever, a member with uniform, and then not administer that to the family who resides in that house with them because it is an immune boosting serum. That's the answer which I got. Now, I think that it is proper for me to make this point before the professor leaves, but also make the point, Chairperson, that when for the first time I heard about availability of this, I didn't even know the name of the medication which is likely to boost the immune system of soldiers were to be deployed. Chair, I did not hesitate when the matter was raised with me because I knew that during the course of COVID, right at the beginning, even before the lockdown, there had been an engagement between our men and women in uniform, our men and women in uniform in China, our men and women in uniform in Cuba, discussing ways of managing the pandemic. So I did not have a problem with that. So when the chief reported that the Cubans are saying there is something which they are administering to both their soldiers and to everybody which boosts the immune system, not a vaccine, and I should say this, they did not say they have a vaccine. It was said to me